Welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium Miguel Network and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. How are we feeling tonight, fellas? We're
pretty good, man.
Got some college football playoffs starting tomorrow, or I guess when the show drops today. So some exciting things ahead.
I'm excited. I hope Ohio State does disgusting things to Miami.
A peek behind the curtain. I just watched Illinois kick a game-winning field goal against Tennessee. So that always makes for a good night.
Tennessee lost? That's a shame.
You hate to see stuff like that, man. Poor old SEC, right?
It's tough.
What bowl game are they even in, Dev?
The Music City Bowl. Lost in front of, looks like about 40,000 really, really, really big Orange fans. Just a bunch of fat fans over there in Knoxville.
Coming out swinging early, huh?
Something about that throw up inside of a pumpkin orange, even in late December, gets the stomach turning, don't it?
Yeah, like Batesy said best, something about that orange. But, yeah, feeling good. Happy to be talking with the boys. Hope you guys had a happy and merry Christmas. And I hope everyone has a safe new year in store and ready to talk some Gators. And also got the Bolts behind me. It's officially, you know, hockey season, full swing. Bolts are playing some good puck right now. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, and we'll be
excited to get out to a couple Bolts games.
No, you're banned.
No, John from Tampa is banned. John from Tampa has wreaked havoc on Tampa Bay sports. I think he's a collective 1-10 between the Bolts, the Rays, and the Bucks.
Okay, well,
me on the other hand, I have a pretty decent record.
Well, the Bucks is 1-10 themselves their last 11. It feels like so. I don't know if he's the bad luck of Tampa Athletics, but we got a guest coming on here shortly, Neil Blackman of Florida Basketball Hour. We join us talking hoops. We'll start with basketball talk once he gets on. I know we usually start the football route. A lot of news since we last dropped the show over the weekend with the transfer portal. We'll get into all that. But we'll start with Gators entering league play Saturday against Missouri, coming off a 22-point victory over Dartmouth. I was there Monday night to witness that. Pretty not a great second half to get a confidence builder going into league play. Will, what was your takeaway and as the Gators gear up to head the road and head to Columbia, Missouri?
Yeah, it was just that. The first half, we actually looked pretty good. We were running crisp offense, playing good defense, rebounding. It was so clear how big of an advantage size-wise, especially with Ruben. I thought Micah Handelogden looked good in the first half. But in the second half, it was just kind of pathetic. I don't know if it was because we were sort of mixing the rotations a little bit, trying to figure out, you know, is it going to be Zay Brown? Is it going to be Kovachev? Is it going to be is Alex Lloyd going to get into the mix? CJ Ingram, that kind of thing. But very disappointed in the second half. I would have really liked – I think the line was like 35.5 points or something, and we didn't even come close, even though we were in position to really smoke them and do pretty good for our net ratings and stuff like that. That would will, you know, come into play later in the season as we figure out seeding. And so disappointing finish to the Gators. I think that's kind of been the trend of these little bye games. I think Colgate, we kind of played a full 40 minutes. But even George Washington, you know, we sort of toyed with them in the first half, taking all sorts of threes in the first 10 minutes and then kind of settled down, played Florida basketball, dominated them for the next 15 minutes. And then once the game was fully out of reach, it was like we were disinterested in closing out the game. And so a little concerned because, you know, if you sort of turn that switch off in SEC play, then this league is good enough that somebody is going to come back and beat you on a buzzer beater. So we got to hope that Todd's ripping into him and that the guys come focused for a full 40 minutes from here on out.
Yeah, there was a point in the first half, I think, where I texted you guys and said that I think that Dartmouth is worse than St. Francis. We were up by 26 at the half. The line was 35.5 for the game. So well on our way to covering. And then just Dartmouth got hot. They couldn't miss. And we just, like I think Will said it best, just kind of looked disinterested there for a little bit. I will say that there were points in these three bye games where you looked up and you thought that the team kind of started to look how you expected them to look from the beginning of the year, in terms of how Xavier Lee was playing, in terms of how Boogie Flan started to kind of come around. Going into these bye games, we wanted to see him shoot better, and I think that we did see that. You know, there were points, I think, where all three of the guards that have been getting the majority of the minutes really heated up from three, which is an encouraging sign. It's just a weird game, too. I think Condon had three fouls in the first 7 minutes or the first 12 minutes, and Golden kind of let him play through that. You kind of know what, you know, the game's not really in doubt when you're playing against the Dartmouth. So being able to let Condon play through the frustration and kind of work through being off, you know, it wasn't necessarily his night, but he kind of got to overcome that adversity a little bit. Micah responded again well, 12 rebounds in 14 minutes at one point last night. So a little bit of a rough second half. You hate getting outscored. You hate giving up 46 points and a half, but I was proud to see the way the boys came out, shot the ball well, scored some points, looked a little loose, and, you know, good bye game, good three-game stretch going into SEC play to build a little bit of confidence.
Yeah, to echo the point, I think the confidence is important, Dev. Hand up, the last couple games have been tipped off at some inopportune times for your fella out here on the West Coast, so I haven't really got to see much action live, but I've been box score hunting, and, you know, see that Lee's been, you know, starting to score a little bit more, which is encouraging to see, and I just saw we got up early big in the first half, and then obviously they outscored us in the second half last night, but or Monday night, but it is what it is there. To your point, though, and I think we kind of talked about it when we were losing those close non-conference games early, that we had to take advantage of this late stretch in the non-conference to build that momentum going into conference play. And you would like to think we've done that with this winning streak, and hopefully it can stretch into, you know, heading up to a conference opener up in Columbia, Missouri, and we can beat the Tigers and start conference play off with a W.
Yeah, it's been rough getting over to the O'Connell Center. 6 o'clock tip Monday night. Had to dip the office a little early, but
you poor guy.
I know. I did get there early though, so I was able to leave early to go to the game.
But Jackson, usually you're talking about leaving around 2:30 to go get some Friday rounds in. So I would figure you could leave the office whenever you wanted.
Unfortunately, I don't have the dev schedule tomorrow, or I'd be teeing it up with him to end 2025 on the golf course. But we'll have to hit that another day. But my bad, I got Neil. We got Neil coming on now. Sent him the wrong email for the link, so we'll get him added and talk some Gator hoops.
That's our fearless leader,
Mr. Producer.
How's it going, Neil?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining.
Doing good. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
Trying to there we go. Neil, host of the Florida Basketball Hour, great follow on Twitter, as you guys all know. If you haven't, make sure you're following him on there, YouTube, Spotify, their Patreon's really informative as well. Him and Hayes do a great job, so we appreciate you joining
Hayes.
Us.
Hayes? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
Bad. I got the Hayes Fawcett notifications on right now, so it's like all I see on my notification. 50,000.
That's brutal. Poor Eric. Don't lump Eric in with Hayes. Eric would never reuse the same graphic for 50,000 different players.
Oh man, I don't know how we're
over
gonna.
Florida.
Yeah,
pick the graphic over Florida.
Over Florida.
But Neil,
I can attest. I've been a subscriber to the Patreon since day one, and I think I've listened to Florida Basketball Hour for how long have you guys been doing it, Neil? 7 or 8 years now?
Yeah, this is our eighth season. If we count the Mike White years.
Yeah, the first my young memory of the Florida Basketball Hour is when Florida showed up to play an Ole Miss game. I think it was in year three of Mike White, maybe, because I believe we had gone to the Elite Eight, and you just went all ballistic on them, challenging the staff, asking if they even wanted to be at Florida because of how terrible showing it was in a Saturday primetime game against Ole Miss. where the Gators got slaughtered, and somehow Mike White lasted another like 4 or 5 years after that.
Yeah, Teflon Mike. Unbelievable, that guy.
Yeah.
Better times since then, thankfully.
But again, definitely go follow and subscribe. It is well worth the $5 or $6 or whatever the top tier price range is. I listen to the videos every single time they come out.
Yeah, and hey, Neil, thank you. Just wrapped up.
For $6, it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it's great. And instant analysis as well for most of the games, especially with league play starting, so make sure you go check them out. But we were just wrapping up some Dartmouth talk. The 3 bye games that were pretty essential.
Yeah.
I don't know if we really capitalized on those 3 bye games the way maybe the staff wanted to. Just what are your thoughts on how this season's kind of progressed as we enter league play Saturday night in Columbia?
I thought the bye games were good for 2 reasons. Like that. Well, I think Todd will meet with the media on I guess he's going to meet with the media on Friday. Because he's obligated to, and we haven't gotten anything that says it'll be tomorrow. So, point is, I think he's going to say Xavier Lee was consistent in the bye games. Like, regardless of level of competition, they appear to have hit a level of consistency there from the UConn game forward. And really, the 2 games prior to the Duke game, he was pretty good. So, you know, it's starting to trend the right way with him. And I think that was the first kind of point. And then the second one is, I mean, Todd summed it up. Like, we're not going to sunshine pump on Florida basketball hour either. Somebody said, hey, how do you think the battle for the 8th man that you really want is going? And Todd said, we would love to have one. And that was his answer to that question last night. It's kind of like, yep. You know, Zay Brown is probably who they would go to at Mizzou, but I think some of that's going to be based on scout right now, as opposed to we just like Zay. And also, if Zay practices the way that sometimes he practices, which is bad, he's not going to play. And you know, I just think that they, with young players in Todd's program, they're not going to mess around with that. Like, you either come and are consistent on a day-to-day basis, or, you know, you won't win the 8th man job that your talent says you should win. So that's kind of where they're at with him. And, you know, I guess Alex Lloyd helped himself a little last night in that he kind of stayed in the conversation. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they're going to need 8 guys if they want to, one of their goals is to win the SEC. And I don't think that they've found that person yet.
Yeah, there was an interesting comment I thought that Patrick Young made on the broadcast last night, talking about how over the course of the non-conference schedule, that, you know, if you can get 5% better, you know, the first couple months of the season, if they just find a way to get 5% better, maybe they don't have their 4 losses that they've had this year. Maybe the Duke, the UConn, or the Arizona game switches the other way. You've watched plenty of Gator basketball. You've watched plenty of college basketball nationally. Do you think that this team, based on what we've seen so far, has that 5% in them? Have there been the signs of improvement as we've gone along that Florida fans can hang their hat on going into SEC play this year?
Yeah, that's a great. They've definitely gotten better. Like have gotten better. They've gotten better offensively, really in 2 ways. One, even though they're not making shots the level that, you know, at least historically, the numbers say they should shoot better than they're shooting. I don't think this was ever going to be a great shooting team. And I went on SEC Network and a bunch of podcasts before the season, and that was the constant question was, well, what happens? What goes wrong? And I think I was on with Peter Burns, and I was like, well, there's a chance they can't shoot. And he was like, really? And I'm like, you know, if they shoot 34% from 3, then they're going back to the Final 4. And he was like, that's kind of low. And I was like, it won't matter the way they're going to rebound. Well, they're not close to 34%. So right now, they're not there. But they should be, based on who's on the roster. Xavier Lee is about a 36.5% career guy from out there. Boogie Fland shot 35% last year, but more importantly, Boogie shot like 40% in a very, very high level of high school basketball. I know that line is a little closer, but it's not like substantially enough to make much of a difference. Like, he should be shooting better than 23%, I guess is the point. That said, I have liked the way that the guards have made a point to attack the paint in the last, really since the second half of the Duke game. And the way that Florida's bigs seal so well, when you attack, there's going to be space. The one thing I don't like, and I know the staff is working on it, and I don't think it's like Boogie making bad decisions. I think he's being himself. And so, like, he looks to distribute and he wants to organize the offense, and the kid doesn't really turn the ball over and he plays great defense. I wish he were more aggressive. I don't know if that's in his personality. He's a quiet dude. Like, I think he's competitive, but, you know, there's a little bit of Will Richard, like, middle of his career in there, where the staff wondered, like, they thought they knew Will cared, but, like, man, can we see him be more competitive and assertive night after night? And I don't know if Boogie does that. Case in point, like, there was a possession last night at the end of the first half where Florida set two different screens for Fland to attack. This is the last possession that Florida had off the bounce. And the idea was, if you attack, we can either kick to Xavier for a three, or maybe you can get a pass to Kondo after the seal and you get a layup. And both times he rejected the screen and passed, once to Xavier Lee, the other time to Alex Kvechev, who then lost the ball and there was the turnover. And, you know, Hauk makes a heroic play and gets to the free throw line. And it was like, they're walking in and they didn't yell at him. It's just John Sapphire puts his arm around him, one of these Florida assistants, on the way in. And he's like, man, you know, I obviously didn't hear their conversation, but I have a pretty good idea that it was something along the lines of, hey dude, if we set two ball screens for you, will you please attack the damn basket? you know, and I just think that's what Boogie, like, with Boogie, so much of it is like, hey, we need you to be aggressive. We need you to be confident. And I haven't seen that player. I saw him in flashes at Duke, and I saw him a lot before he got hurt at Arkansas, and when we need that guy.
Yeah. Neil, you mentioned Alex Lloyd, and you also mentioned Zay Brown and him having sort of consistency issues in practice. I think if I remember correctly, you coached Alex Lloyd for a time in high school, when he was in high school. So what do you see that is his biggest problem, where he's kind of had a disappointing start to his career coming in as a pretty heralded recruit, with decent size lengthwise, but obviously a little undersized, you know, from a weight perspective. But what has been the biggest hiccup for him to really seize the eighth or even ninth man role for the Gators?
Well, I coached against him.
Okay.
By the time he got to Westminster, I was gone from there. So I can't take any credit for anything that Alex Lloyd's done on a basket since ninth grade. And he's I call him Will Richard class kid. He's a Will Richard class kid, you know, like Will Richard, Tim Tebow, Tommy Houck. There's an echelon of young person that plays at places, and he is in that echelon. You know, I mean, just an incredible young man on and off the court. And you know, I don't think he's used to what they're like. They came in and they're like, we're going to teach you to be a point guard. We're going to teach you to have the ball more. Well, he played off the ball at Westminster all the time. And then, you know, he won three straight Peach Jams, so he's not used to losing. And he played with the Boozers, but the Boozers would tell you, hey, that guy's every bit as good as Caden. Nobody's as good as Cam. But, like, you know, he was the second best player on those AAU teams, not the third best. And so, like, it's just confidence and defending. And, like, The myth on Todd, Jackson probably knows this because I know he's chatted with him and stuff. The myth on TG is like, oh, you know, they want to play with tempo. They want to score. And all that's true, right? So I guess it's not really myth. But the reality on Todd is if you don't defend your ass off, you're not playing. He's not going to get mad at a kid for missing a shot. But if you don't fight your way through a screen on defense, then Todd is just not going to be very happy with you. And these are the – if you miss a shot and then you let it affect your defense, you're going to sit. People are like, what happened to Will Richard when he was a sophomore and junior? Well, his minutes decreased a little bit when he wasn't guarding. And Todd's like, well, Will went 0 for 6 tonight. I don't care if he plays defense, right? Hey, Walt went 2 for 13. Yeah, and he got blown by on a couple drives. But Walt was competing when he was getting blown by. It wasn't like he was out there not playing defense. It's just that his pudgy little country boy butt wasn't good enough to guard the dude that he was trying to guard, right? Like, you know, and with Alex, it's like, let me see you compete. So when he blocked a shot last night and the bench went nuts, up 30, that's what they want to see out of him. And with Zay, it's practice. Like, he seems to be, you know, he's a gamer. He clearly shows up when the lights are on. That's great. But, you know, if you turn the ball over 6 times in practice, you know, when they play 5-on-5, it's hard to be confident in a kid. I say, as a coach, I know that. And I'm sure this staff, having coached a lot more than me, they know that. So I don't know if that totally answers the question. That's kind of where those guys are.
No, it does. I didn't realize that that Lloyd played mostly off the ball. I remember you and Eric had talked about him being on the same team as the Boozer twins, so that makes sense that he was off the ball in high school and that he's sort of still learning the point guard position. So, I mean, yeah. Todd and the staff have a pretty good track record of developing off the ball scorer guards into first round pick point guards and you know, national champion most outstanding players. So. Hopefully we can see a similar rise from Alex Lloyd.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be really good. I mean, Todd doesn't make those kind of proclamations. Like Todd said, he's going to be an all-SEC player at Florida. So Todd Golden's not going to say that if he doesn't believe it. It's just, you know, I think he's playing Colgate and he's taking the ball up the court and he's trying to process what the play is instead of getting the ball across the half court line. So when you see him walk off the court with his head down, you know, he's upset and it's hard to watch, but I think all of this is going to be good for him. But that was the best thing that happened in the Dartmouth game in the second half, which was their worst half of basketball in a month, was that Alex played well.
Yeah. And to your point on Todd demanding that the players play defense, I guess that's really what happened if you went all the way back to the Riley Kugel days where, you know, he still would show flashes of 20-point nights. But when he was refusing to play any semblance of team defense, he went from the highest paid NIL guy on the team to certified bench warmer.
That's right. And you know, and the minutes that he got down the stretch that season, when he did play, it was because he'd get a rip and he'd go guard and they'd be like, all right, he's going to guard today. We don't know what Riley we're going to get. And when this staff doesn't know what dude they're going to get, that dude is in the portal.
Yeah.
So it's a big couple months for Isaiah Brown. And I know Carlin Hartman believes in him a lot. And I know the staff, you know, he was a top 150 player, which for them, he was the highest recruited player on last year's national championship team. So, you know, it's time to start figuring out what it takes to be a winning player.
For sure. And Neil, you know, you talked about these last couple of bye games to build that momentum. And we had the brutal stretch early with those three big games, Arizona, Duke, UConn. Obviously, we lost all three of them. Had a chance to win all three, all in different ways. when you guys were kind of breaking down those games, or is there something that kind of stuck out in those three games that was kind of the difference in us not getting one of those signature wins? And maybe we're kind of starting to do that a little bit better now, or is it kind of just a formality that those games, you know, they shot better than us. Foul trouble obviously was an issue. But is there something that maybe when you guys were really breaking down the film, the X's and O's, that kind of chalked down why we weren't able to pull off a signature win early in the non-conference slate?
That's an awesome question.
Thank you.
So they would – what we figured – what we decided and what the staff decided, and Fawcett and I are proud when this happens. We're pretty much the same exact thing. It was the last eight of the first half. They call them mini games, four-minute mini games. And they lost the four-minute mini games against Duke, Arizona, and UConn by 54 points.
Wow.
So you're talking three games that they lost by a combined 11, right? Or 12. I'm bad at math. That's why I went to law school. You're like kind of – think about that. And then they come out on these big runs. Now, part of that is the way they play. I think Florida really does wear people down. They're so big. They're so physical. You can deal with that for 20 minutes. You can deal with it for 24 minutes. By minute 30, like Ruben Chinyelu and Alex Condon playing harder than any person on earth is fairly tiring, And then like Tommy Houck, you know, his motor's relentless. The way Boogie guards, how fast he is. Think about how Boogie played the last 10 minutes at Duke, where he was just blowing by guys. I mean, you can keep up with somebody like that for a while, but eventually I do think Florida wears on you. So it was those mini games. Some of it was luck too. And I hate even saying that, but in the Arizona game, like Koa Pete, I pulled it up before I came on because I thought we might get asked about this. So Koa Pete was 6 of 7 on mid-range two-pointers against Florida. You know what he shot the rest of the season on those?
I know he hasn't had as dominant of a game since Florida.
Yeah, he's 9 of 30 on mid-range twos since the Florida game. He went 6 of 7, just unconscious against Florida. Some of those over Ruben Chinyelu, who I think is the front runner for SEC Defensive Player of the Year. A couple of them over Alex Condon, who, while not playing like an All-American, is playing like an All-SEC big. I mean, the guy just was unconscious. So some of it was like that. I know at the time people criticized the play at the end of the Duke game. Jackson was there. Like, Florida defended that okay, actually. Like, Urban just cheated a little too far over. They didn't blow anything defensively. It was literally Urban went over to help to try to force Boozer left. And Slim Evans, who was 0 for 7, made a 25-foot three as Klavsar closed out. And if you watch the replay, Herb was, a foot from him when the shot left his hand. So, I mean, that great play by Duke, really well executed. Decent defense, not great defense. And the shot went in.
Yeah, that mini games is that's a jarring number there when you really –
it's crazy. Put in,
especially when you say that, you know, Todd, that's something that they really kind of emphasize and, you know, and that's something you can really chalk those three games up. I mean, that is an unreal point differential that you can't really overcome when you're playing that talent.
No, this team's margin for error for at least two reasons is just not as big, right? One, they don't shoot nearly as well, and two, they don't have Walter Clayton Jr. I mean, so when you have Walter Clayton Jr., you can be down by 10 points to Texas Tech with 3.5 minutes to go and win. And this team isn't good. They're not going to do that. If they're down 10 points in the Sweet 16, you can pray to whoever you pray to, and it probably isn't going to help. But, you know, Walt made it help.
And, you know, kind of pivoting off the with your X's and O's breakdown, Tommy Houck transitioning to the three. What have you seen with him? I think that one of the biggest things out of these three bye games is Tommy only averaging 26 minutes. I think he played 25, 26, and 27 minutes across the board these last three games. They give him rest. I think he has played north of 34 minutes in 9 of the 13 games this year, nine of those being the first 10 games. How do you see him mixed into this offense, playing that three, and kind of that his health, the minute limits he had these last three games to kind of give those legs some rest going into the conference play?
Yeah, that's great. I love the minute limits. I think probably 28 against Dartmouth was more than they wanted to play him to, and they just never got a media timeout last night. That was really weird the first 10 minutes of the second half because it was so clean. And
correct, yeah.
So all of a sudden, I thought Boogie might pass out there. I was wondering if Todd was going to call a timeout. So I was getting a little worried. But, yeah, I think that's good. And, you know, I keep wanting to criticize something about him being at the three because I know, like, the basketball criticism is their spacing is weird, right? Because it's three dudes and they don't really have a natural guy they can kind of slot in the corner. But Tommy wasn't scoring with his back to the basket anyway. So, like, that aspect of playing him as a second big was never really something it's not something they're missing, and he's still getting plenty of offensive rebounds. And I think he's been pretty good coming off screens. Now, I don't think they play him in the pick and roll much, which is something that Fawcett and I anticipated Florida playing a little more in the pick and roll with the bigs. They've done it some with Condo here lately. They played through Alex Condon a lot. They don't play through Tommy maybe as much with him playing at the three. But I don't think the spacing is bad. And then, like, analytically, I think if they had an eighth man, maybe we'd see a little more of him at the four and we'd know. But their on-off splits with Tommy on the floor offensively versus when he is out, they're better offensively when he's on the floor and he's been playing the three. So I think it's working. It's just, I mean, sometimes things aren't as complicated as we want, even when we're, like, analytic nerds. And the reality is, like, Florida needs to make shots, man.
Neil, looking ahead, obviously we go up to Como on Saturday night and then come back home for a couple of massive rivalry games against a ranked Georgia team and a ranked Tennessee team. What do you think the expectations should be? Obviously, before the season, it was win the SEC regular season title. What do you think those expectations are now for this team going into SEC play? And if Florida's not the favorite, who is, in your eyes, the favorite to win the regular season SEC title?
I think Florida's goal should be to win the SEC championship. And I've shared that with people in the program, which is not something I typically do. But I think that should be their goal. Hadn't been done in Gainesville in a while, and should be something that this team should be able to do it. They're the KenPom favorite to win the league, behind Vanderbilt, who I think Vanderbilt is the favorite to win the league. Vanderbilt, while not like Florida last year, their roster is built differently. But like Florida last year, they didn't challenge themselves too much in the non-conference. But it's not like they played nobody. St. Mary's is very good. They destroyed them. And they have six wins against Quad 1 and Quad 2, which is kind of where Florida was last year, again. And they've annihilated everyone in the non-conference, which also Florida did. Although they had one close game, like Florida. UNC was Florida's. Vanderbilt's was Memphis, who's terrible, but somehow Vanderbilt didn't play very good. And Vanderbilt's front court is limited. Their best big is Jalen Washington, who's not very good. So it'll be interesting to see, like, what happens when they play Florida or somebody that can really dominate the glass. But they also shoot like 38% from three, and they can shoot you out of a game pretty quick, which will be something Florida will have to be careful about. You know, is if a team gets Dartmouth hot against Florida, this Gator team, their path to come back is harder because they don't make a bunch of threes, right? I think of the first three games, actually the most difficult one is Saturday. And I know maybe that's kind of a hot take because Georgia's playing really well, but Georgia's 15th in the SEC in three-point percentage. Go figure, a Mike White team that can't shoot. They do play fast and they rebound, but I think Florida matches up very well with Georgia. – And I think while Jacoby Gillespie is awesome, Florida has played very well against Tennessee at home. So I think that should continue. But Como is a tough place, man. The Antlers, that's one of the best student sections in the sport. Mark Mitchell, I think, is one of the best players in the SEC, not just bigs. And Anthony Robinson is a tough matchup for both of Florida's guards out there defensively. He was a guy who was all SEC defensive team last year. I'm not saying that Missouri will win. I told Todd the other day that, hey, you're 0-3 SEC openers. And he said, well, we had to play Kentucky twice. And I said, that's great. You're 0-3 in SEC openers. But we'll see. You know, to not get to 0-4, they're going to have to go beat a Missouri team that has frankly not been terribly competitive against excellent teams. And I think Florida is an excellent team. The question, of course, is like Missouri's had like a week to sit on getting blown out by 40 by a rival. They're going to be pissed. It's going to be loud. It's going to be like 10 degrees in Missouri when Florida lands. Like, it's a long trip. It's just a lot of stuff, right? And you got to overcome all that, and you're the gang that can't shoot straight. Like, it's a challenging game.
Well, speaking of Vanderbilt and the gang that can't shoot straight, maybe Vanderbilt will be in for one of those double negatives when Florida goes up to the Memorial Gymnasium where nobody can shoot, and all of a sudden they'll right. arch it, you know, they'll curve it right in there. But thinking about the SEC as a whole and Florida's, you know, coming off the national championship and everything, what do you still see the expectations as second weekend? And perhaps go further from there, or given the fact that we're 0-3 against you know, the three best teams we've played so far, have you sort of reset your expectations a little bit?
I think this team is still a second weekend team. Now, I think they're the kind of team that can get clipped in round two because they shoot 24% and miss 10 free throws, right? So I think shooting obviously is a way to get beat in the NCAA tournament, but it's still like gun to head hard for me to think like Tommy Houck and Alex Condon and Ruben Chinula are just going to get beat in their last game in the second round in like Tampa, Florida, right? Like, I don't think that's happening. I think the margin for error for them once they get to the second weekend is extraordinarily small. And we saw that in the early schedule, but they played number 2, number 6, and number 7 in KenPom. And I think they very clearly played two teams that I expect to be at the Final Four in UConn and Arizona. So, you know, and then they played the other team they played at the craziest environment I've ever experienced in college basketball. So, and should have probably won the game. So, like, when this team plays the way they're capable of playing, like, they're absolutely good enough to win two more games on the second weekend. But yeah, I mean, my expectations, and you listen to the show, Will, so like my expectations were always, I think this is a second weekend team and then we'll see what happens. And I'm still on that page. The reason I did reset and the reason I made known the SEC championship thing is I think it's good to have a goal like, let's win a championship the year after you win a national championship. Wouldn't that be a statement? And to me, like,
yeah,
the more reasonable championship to try to win this year is the SEC title. So, you know, go out and do it. And yeah, I mean, every team at the top of the league has flaws. Like, Florida isn't great at shooting. Vanderbilt has front court questions. Alabama, their front court is awful. Like, Bill Napier offense, awful. Auburn can't guard a soul. You know, so and Tennessee, they run like one play for Jacoby Gillespie, and again, he's awesome, but like Nate Amendt, now could Nate Amendt be a super problem in February and March? Absolutely. Does that mean Tennessee's gonna like win the SEC? Well, there's a whole January to play where Tennessee has a lot of hard games, and I don't know, like maybe Tennessee wins the SEC tournament, but over 18 games, will they get Nate Amendt good enough to where like Jacoby Gillespie has the help he needs? I don't think so. So I think Florida has the best roster, and I think Florida has one of the best coaches. And so, like, I like their chances in league play.
Yeah. The SEC is kind of doing what the Big Ten traditionally does when they don't have Michigan blowing everybody out, where they just have a handful of like 12 teams that are all going to make the NCAA tournament, and only about four of them are going to advance to the second round, and then two of them hit the Sweet 16. But they're just a clump of really solid but flawed teams. Tough question to close, at least last one for me. Outside of shooting and finding an eighth man, what is your biggest concern about the Gators over the course of the next couple months?
Probably just, shooting and finding an eighth man. Honestly, I don't have any basketball concerns beyond those two things. Like, they're elite defensively. They're going to be elite defensively. They have great leadership. Just health, right? Like, this year, particularly Hauk and Flan are kind of the two guys that I think are pretty irreplaceable. And I know Flan seems weird because we haven't really seen him go nuts yet and take over a game offensively, except for the second half of Duke. But he's so good defensively, and he does a lot of things that, like, coaches, the coach speak would be that you don't see in the box score.
Yeah.
But it's true. Like, you know, when Boogie Fland is on the floor, Florida is a much better defensive team. They're third in on-off splits at CBB Analytics when Fland is on the floor. Nationally in defense, when he's on, when he's off, they're 35th, which is still good. But that's a 30-spot drop-off. And you actually saw it in the UConn game, right? He gets into foul trouble to the point that Sam made earlier. Well, who wasn't on the floor in that 8-minute minigame against UConn? Boogie Fland. Right, comes back into the game. Florida makes the big run, gets the lead, and it's kind of wire to wire. So he's very, very important.
Interesting answer. I feel like a lot of just viewers would probably think that, and couch tweeters like myself would probably be poo pooing on Boogie Fland a little bit. But you're the one that knows. So I will be reconsidering my take over the next couple weeks as we go through SEC play.
Well, I'd like him to hit some more shots.
that would certainly help. Definitely,
he's getting paid to do more than what he's doing.
That we can all agree on.
He knows it.
Yeah.
Well, great insight into basketball season, Neil. And it's not the only season going on for Gator Nation. It's everyone's favorite transfer portal season. You know, the infamous transfer portal season probably has gotten off to a bit of a rocky start for the Gators, and I'm sure Gator Nation might not be the most thrilled at some of the departures and everything that they're hearing. What do you kind of make of the early rumors, rumblings of the transfer portal as it, I think, what officially opens on the second of the new year upon us here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going like what the loss that hurts. I feel like there's like one exit where it's not a replacement level player at this point. And look, I wrote for the year that I thought it was incredible that Aaron Gates came back from his injury, but he's now in the portal with three season-ending injuries in his last 4 years. Like, I wish him well at James Madison. I hope he has a wonderful career there, but like, he's also been out for the season since his senior year of high school, three of the 4 years he's played. I mean, and I like the kid, but Woods, that's the one loss that seems to hurt right now, officially. You'll say Eugene Wilson, and I'll say the same thing. Like, stay on the field, and we'll have a conversation, you know. Maybe in a year I look terrible for this take, but my guess is, like, he's going to get a hit pointer somewhere and miss six games. Like, so, yeah, I mean, they're doing fine, you know. And they made every possible overture to Woods that they could. The kid just wanted to leave.
I appreciate Neil for maybe talking these guys off the ledge a little bit of some of these departures, and just one real meaningful, kind of irreplaceable. I know there's some guys that will jump in eventually that can kind of fill that position, and we're going to pay them a pretty penny. But just no overreactions, fellas. We got two more weeks of this, so. Summerall's got plenty of time to construct a roster of guys that want to play for the patch for probably a discounted route.
Well, Jackson, you liked my overreaction so much, you asked me to start a podcast with you. So, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
They do need to retain Jaden Paul. Like,
agreed.
I've heard people make the, like, you know, money ball arguments about running backs and stuff. And I'm like, that's great. Like, this is more of an optics thing. And optics do matter. They matter. They matter because, like, high school recruiting still matters. And it's lost in this, like, NIL portal universe. But when Kirby Smart goes to SEC Media Days and says, like, my number one focus in the offseason is still high school recruiting. Like, maybe people should listen to him since he's like 8,002, right? Like, he knows what he's doing, and he's been right for a long time, and he's the best coach in the sport. And he, oh, by the way, coaches our arch rival. So, like, you know, listen to him when he talks in that respect. And I think keeping Jaden Ball would be like a statement. It would be like, look, Florida had the best running back in the country coming back, and they retained him, right? You know, Florida had to pay Walter Clayton $500,000 more in the last week before the portal closed to keep him from going back to St. John's, or I guess it wouldn't have been back. So last year, a lot of people don't know this, like, Patino made a hard run at him again. And so Florida had to re-recruit Walt and keep Walt. And, you know, I guess a week before he made his announcement, like, Florida upped the NIL offer to him a little bit. And some people came together and wrote checks. People are going to write Jaden Ball the checks. So, like, keep him on campus. I think that's super important. If he leaves and they sign, like, you'll know the lies on Twitter, because the lies will be like, these two running backs are great. Their production has been, I'll be like, they aren't Jaden Ball, man. You know? It would have been the same with Walter Clinton Jr. Like, sometimes you just got to keep a guy. So that's when I would overreact. But right now, okay. I mean, Woods, that sucks. Go pay somebody else that's good.
Yeah. And these are a bunch of players that are below 500 and fresh off a 4-8 team. I know they came to play for Billy Napier. Why can't they play for another coach? But plenty of guys that will join the Gators here the next 2 weeks that will upgrade in those.
To that same point, though, when Georgia and Texas and Ohio State are coming after your players, they're coming after them for a reason. And you have to, at a certain point, I get it's his first year and his first offseason, he's been on the job for a month. At a certain point, when these other big-time programs start coming for the top of your roster, the best players on your roster, you have to optically make it known nationally, you're not going to come into Gainesville, Florida, and take our best players and take the guys we want to keep. And I think we wanted to keep Jaden Woods. Obviously, he's a replaceable guy. He was a young guy. But Jaden Baugh, Vernell Brown, Miles Graham, Dallas Wilson, those guys, they're not just guys that grow on trees. There's a reason why Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, and all those programs want them.
Yep, that's 100% right. And I think Baugh is the one that's the most important optically. I would put Dallas Wilson, Skip, Miles Graham probably third. And they've kept number three. And I know Miles has been more productive than Dallas Wilson, but you all have eyes. You all watch a lot of football. Like, Dallas Wilson is a different looking dude. Keep him in Baugh and you're in good shape. But I appreciate you guys. I got to hop, but thank you for
thanks for your time, Neil. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We appreciate it.
All right. Well, you can follow Neil. Also writes for Saturday Down South. Him and Eric Fawcett do a great job on Florida Basketball Hour. Make sure you check out their Patreon. All their shows across all platforms. Make sure you follow them on Twitter. But pretty insightful. I think the thing that stuck out, Will, is your final question to him, his concern outside the shooting and not finding an eighth man. He really doesn't have one.
Yeah, I think if I were to answer that question, we've sort of pointed out, and shout out to Paul from Gainesville. He says that we commit some really dumb fouls sometimes. And so I could see a situation where, like, Boogie Flan commits two dumb fouls and gets roped for a third one and we lose to a UConn or something like that. So foul trouble, I think, but I guess that kind of relates a little bit to the lack of there being an eighth man and the inability to create some depth at the guard position. Really interesting point on Boogie Fland and how crucial he is to Florida's success, especially defensively. And obviously, since we can't shoot straight, the defense is going to be the calling card for probably the rest of the season. But great insight from Neil. Those guys are fantastic. The way Eric has been writing unbelievably great articles for Gator Country for the better part of the last decade. One that will always stick with me is this analytic breakdown he did on timeout usage and the plus minus that teams were seeing after the coach took a timeout, and he was essentially doing it to talk about how Mike White needed to use his timeouts better. But you know, Todd Golden, he can let the runs go a little long for my liking without calling a timeout. But that old timeout usage article was one of the best things I'd ever read. And they've just made me such a smarter basketball fan, I feel like, over the years of listening to them. So definitely give those guys a follow.
Will, did you say that was Hayes or Eric?
It was Eric Fawcett.
That was crazy. One little thing on the portal before we pivot. Obviously, we talk about retaining Ball, super important. Retaining Dallas Wilson, super important. If you're able to do that, you should be able to attract a high-profile quarterback in the portal if that is the route they want to take. Obviously, I think we've seen some reports that they maybe don't want to do that, and they certainly might have a plan in place. But it just kind of goes to show, like, if you retain those guys, the other opportunities and windows it could open. And I'll keep driving the same Levitt bus to Gainesville, but I don't know if that's actually going to happen. But I'm just saying.
It sounds like he's driving up to Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah, he is from the state of Oregon, so it would make sense as a little homecoming for him. But
and they just had their guy who was supposed to be the heir apparent to Dante Moore announced he's entering the portal. So seems like the writing may be on the wall.
I think I read too that the kid from Cincinnati, Sorsby, is looking LSU bound. Maybe
I saw LSU bound. Yeah,
at least we I thought he may be Texas Tech bound, but that guy really. I don't understand why he has such great hype. I mean, he threw for 69 yards against Nebraska in the season opener, and then against their best competition, they only put like 14 and 17 points up against like Utah and Texas Tech and everything. And so I don't see it with that guy, but somebody is going to pay like $5 million for a mediocre quarterback. And I guess I'm glad it's not going to be the Florida Gators since we just experienced that last year.
And Philo, we trust.
Some of the QB names in the portal are very interesting, though. You know, high-profile guys. I mean, one was our own. So I'm very interesting to see where, you know, like, Raiola, where is he going to end up? Like, be weird. Quarterback portal is always weird.
How about the guy from Oklahoma State that entered the portal? But he has already his visits planned, and one of the schools he's visiting is Oklahoma State.
Hey, man, never pass up a chance to get wined and dined, you know?
Fair point. I know you would never miss that opportunity, Will, so can't blame the kid.
Absolutely not. That's why I only hang out with you guys when you invite me to galas.
Well, we do have an invite later tonight, or I guess tomorrow on New Year's Eve. We'll be at Dev's house watching.
Yeah, you never gave me a firm answer, Will.
I think I got a thing at that time.
Next time.
No, we're going to play it by ear. We'll see.
All right. Well, yeah.
I will not be in attendance. I regret to inform you guys. Sorry.
We'll snag you for maybe a conference basketball game later this year.
Maybe tentatively pencil me in for Sammy's first game in the Swamp. I think it's only right that Sammy's there for Sammy's first game.
Yeah, Labor Day weekend, perfect time. So come on.
You are a former FAU Owl, aren't you?
I did spend a couple cups of coffee there. Two semesters in the Boca Raton. Was parking my Kia Soul next to Audis and G Wagons in my dorm, and I said,
"Knew it wasn't the place for you."
And I said, "Get me to God's country."
Did you do any hot yoga with Lane Kiffin while you were down there with Joey Freshwater?
No, when I was there, I think it was the Charlie Pettigrew era.
Okay,
it was, and then Willie went there. I don't remember, but yeah, no. Yeah, I am an FAU. I was there for a little bit. They took some of my money as well.
Lane probably wasn't into the hot yoga yet when he was in Boca. I think he was still fat in those days.
Yeah, you can get him. He probably he had some fun in Boca.
He was probably at the beach pool clubs.
Fat and happy.
Yeah.
I do a lot of Boca.
What do you guys
think? We never wanted him anyways.
No, that would have been embarrassing to have that guy calling plays for us. And
well,
throwing the ball around the yard.
Wearing a visor. Wearing the visor that Spurrier wore.
Disgusting.
No.
We didn't want that. Ugh. Can you imagine?
Anyway.
What do y'all think about the next couple days, couple of playoff games? Ohio State, Miami, tomorrow night, and then New Year's Day. Any bold takes or thoughts on the playoff second round?
Yeah, I know 2 years ago, I think we entered 2024 with Ohio State missing a kick right at midnight against Georgia.
Yeah.
I really hope we don't get the same movie tonight against Miami. I'd really like to end our 2025 year watching the Canes lose, especially after that performance they had. And I know they won, but the lackluster of a game they had in College Station. So as much as we despise Ohio State, as Gator fans, watching Miami lose is going to be a nice way to go out, especially celebrating at your house, Dev.
Hey, I'm Big Ten Dev this time of year.
Speaking of that game, that was actually the last time that Ryan Day called plays for the Ohio State University when he was dicing up Kirby Smart with Marvin Harrison Jr. and C.J. Stroud. So now he's had when did they play? It's been about a month to prepare his playbook for the vaunted Miami Hurricanes that slap boxed with the horrible Florida Gators for 3.5 quarters. And so I expect Ohio State's defense has been carrying them. The offense has lagged a little behind with Hartline. Now that the play calling has been shifted back to Ryan Day, I expect them to play pretty well, especially coming off the loss against Indiana. They're going to have something to prove. I think they're going to handle Miami pretty well. I think Alabama's probably going to play it pretty tight against Indiana, closer than people think. I expect Oregon to take care of Texas Tech. And unfortunately, I feel like we're lining up for Kirby Smart to just destroy Ole Miss and whichever of their staff members are still in Oxford versus actually in Baton Rouge.
So this is going to sound stupid, but I think that game could go one of two ways. Like, Ole Miss should have beat them in Athens. Like, they couldn't stop them. They had their number. They were up by 9 in the fourth quarter. People forget Georgia had to, go for it on fourth down from their own 30 and had, a crazy effort from a backup running back diving for a first down to keep the ball. And then obviously they kind of took over the rest of the fourth quarter after that. But I mean, I think not having Lane Kiffin obviously makes a difference, but you'll kind of know, I think, early in that game, like if Georgia comes out and it's just, they're bludgeoning them and they can't stop Georgia's offense and Ole Miss goes 3 and out a couple times and don't really have answers. I think you're going to know early in that game whether you're in for a classic or whether it's going to be a Georgia walk away. As far as the other games go, I've had the take all season that I don't think Alabama's any good, and I still don't think they're any good, but I still think that they're going to play Indiana well, and I think that they could probably beat them. I think Indiana acted like they won the national championship after they beat Ohio State. Like, it was almost like their season's work came down to that game, and now they have to come back a month later after they've kind of read the press clippings about their quarterback. They've won a Heisman. Cignetti's won the Coach of the Year. They go play in the Rose Bowl. Long trip for them too. I think that this could be a spot where Alabama's got more talent than them. Even it's not Nick Saban's Alabama, but it's still a talented Alabama team. And I think that's gonna that the stage is something that that's going to cause Indiana problems. Like I said, I'm Big Ten dev. I hope I'm wrong. But I think that that's, I think Alabama is going to give them issues. So don't really have any strong opinions on Oregon and Texas Tech. I think that that's a, you know, we'll see what Texas Tech is when they're playing a little bit better competition against Oregon this week.
I think that might be the best game of the weekend.
I think it's intriguing because you just don't know who, what, I don't know how good Texas Tech is. They killed everybody they played in the Big 12, but what are they? Who are they when they're playing against, you know, a team with the talent of Oregon?
I agree, Jackson. I think the Oregon-Texas Tech game will be I think it should be a good one. I like Oregon. I think I said last time I was on the pod that they're my sneaky pick to win just because I think there's something about having that first opening round game at home, building that momentum. Obviously, you know, we've only seen one other 12-team playoff, but it was Ohio State last year. And maybe they shouldn't. They were obviously a very incredibly talented 8 seed as what they were, but I think they can use that momentum. And I didn't say anything on the Miami-Ohio State game. I think Miami can maybe keep it close, but I think we're due for a couple going away presents from our good friend Carson Beck in what could be his final game in a college. Well, I don't know. You never know these days. I wouldn't put it past that guy to weasel his way into another year at a different school. But and to Will's point with Day calling plays, it's interesting to see how he can maybe settle Sayan into that kind of setting, that environment. Obviously, Miami's defensive line is, you know, the cream of the crop. So they say, you know, I know Reuben Bain's a dog, and they'll definitely need to try to get to him early to apply pressure. But I still think Ohio State will win. I got Oregon, and then I agree. I think Bama keeps it close. I'll be the one. Give me the upset. Bama's beating Indiana. And then I think Georgia takes care of business.
Well, I think it's going to be a pretty sloppy weather day in the Rose Bowl, which doesn't really benefit Alabama, who cannot run the football.
I did not look at the weather forecast.
I do think that the Miami's offensive line against Ohio State's defensive line might be the two best units at each position. I just don't think Miami can – like. Are they really going to cover Jeremiah Smith and all those guys? Are they really going to move the ball on Ohio State's defense? I don't think so. But there is a world, I guess, where Miami just lines up and runs it right at them behind that offensive line. And, you know, you end up shortening the game and have a game where the winner scores 17 points. So I think that that's an intriguing game.
All right. Well, I'll take Indiana. I'll take Texas Tech. I think they've got two really good backs, and they spread the ball around really well offensively. Caleb Douglas is their leading receiver, but I think they have three guys over 350 yards receiving. And I'll take the Dogs, and unfortunately, in the Peach Bowl on Bourbon Street. And I'll take the Buckeyes to end the new in the 2025 calendar year.
Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, and Ole Miss from Big Ten Dev. Well.
All right. Anything else to add, fellas?
Don't think so. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year from the Breakfast Boys.
I tweeted out every year on January 1st that it's officially Florida's year. And last year I was correct because we won the national championship in basketball. Remind him, Dev. Show him the.
Maybe baseball's got
it's the year of the Jaguar.
Well, appreciate it, guys. Make sure you're following us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Twitter at BreakfastWTG. Make sure you're liked, subscribed, all that good stuff. And happy New Year. Be safe, and we'll see you back next week after the Gators begin conference play in Como. And go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Jags.